I'm Bill Littlefield. This is a sports show, but we are aware of the world beyond the lines, so now we turn to politics, which is, of course, part of every story everywhere, whether or not we choose to acknowledge that. We're going to begin this week's three stories you should know with a look at an area in which sports and politics intersect. Joining me this time around are Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist, and Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report via Skype. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, Mike, what have you been noticing?
Well, Stan Van Gundy, the coach of the Detroit Pistons, let out, I would say, a cri de coeur after Donald Trump was elected. It was just fascinating to read. I am not one of these stick to sports guys, thank God. Otherwise, we'd all be shoved off this show, wouldn't we? And I've also been monitoring conversations about the election in other sports media. I listened to Mike Francesa, the WFAN host, talk about it. He was a big Trump supporter and give his reasons. And it was interesting. I didn't agree with all of his reasons, but it's interesting. Now, interesting isn't a very interesting word to say. So to be more pointed about it, we seem to have very much missed the phenomenon that seems to have driven Trump into office, these disaffected, downwardly mobile white voters, white men. But maybe they show up in a place like the NFL, which is still the dominant cultural force in America. And the difference between NFL coaches' reactions and NBA coaches' reactions were really, I'm not going to say interesting again, I'm going to say they were illustrative. And the NBA, because they're a predominantly black-driven enterprise, even white coaches like Steve Kerr decried Trump's being elected. The NBA was saying one thing about Trump, and the NFL was saying something different. An NFL coach, Rex Ryan, was a big Trump backer, even though he's the coach of the Buffalo Bills. And I was just counting, now that their center got hurt, there's only one white starter on the Buffalo Bills, and it's Richie Incognito, and he's a Trump supporter.
Oh, boy.
It was apparently,
what a surprise.
Yeah, it was apparently driving, right, it was driving the Bills locker room apart. And I think that somehow this maybe says something about where we are as America, or at least as a sports viewing public.
Eric, you want to weigh in on this with some trepidation, I would assume?
I'll step lightly. No, I mean, I cover the Warriors on a daily basis, and I was in the room when Steve Kerr, Mike alluded to the comments that Steve Kerr made. It was really striking to hear because, you know, Steve has a really unique perspective on these things. You know, his father was a very well-known Middle Eastern scholar and academic, and who was actually assassinated by extremists back in 1984. I mean, this is a man who really knows sort of the power that, you know, hateful, unchecked rhetoric can have on people. And so I was really interested to hear what he would say on this. And it was really interesting to sort of think about that in relation to the comments that we got from Bill Belichick and others. For me, you know, Mike talked about sort of the core demographics of what the NBA is. And yeah, the NFL is still number one, but I think there's also a reason why the NBA is growing so much is because it is this sort of younger, more progressive crowd, this, you know, kind of millennial kind of feel. And so this is kind of like where the future is. And it was kind of interesting to sort of see one sport kind of get played against the other.
I think it's incumbent upon me to say something about this, but I'm going to keep it short. I regard people who agree with me on political issues as wise and worthy, whether they are coaches or couch potatoes, attorneys or ambulance drivers. So also football is eating its young, so I'm with a basketball guy. So you want to wrap this up for us, Mike?
Yeah, and I think that plays into a phenomenon of dissecting the election, which is to confuse ascendancy with primacy. And yeah, the NBA is ascendant. And yeah, Democrats have been called the coalition of the ascendant. But if you look at where the demographics are, just in terms of sheer numbers, ascendant doesn't mean on top. And I think Donald Trump taught us that.
All right, we're going to move away from, at least from politics in a direct sense, to talk about something else. It's time to talk about a Cub who is apparently soon to be a former Cub. Aroldis Chapman, he of the 105-mile-per-hour fastball, is a free agent. There's been speculation that somebody, maybe the Yankees, maybe the Dodgers, is going to pay him $100 million over the next 5 years. And it would be ironic if it was the Yankees because he was in their bullpen until midseason. Anyway, I'm wondering if Chapman's value was diminished at all because he's been accused of choking his girlfriend and he's admitted firing a gun in his barn, which terrified her enough so that she called the police. He was suspended for that incident. And then after Theo Epstein brought him onto the Cubs, Epstein said he'd met with Chapman and he'd been assured that Chapman had learned his lesson and would behave himself. And then Chapman later told a reporter that he couldn't remember what he had discussed with Epstein because he was really sleepy during their meeting and didn't really know what he'd said. Does a 100-mile-an-hour fastball trump everything else? That's my question for you, Eric.
I think we're about to see that it does. You know, the Yankees are really the big winner in this because they waited out his whole 30-game suspension from Major League Baseball and then got, you know, this package of prospects back in return. Although I guess since the Cubs won the World Series, you could say they were probably...
Yeah, they did win the World Series, although Aroldis Chapman was not on the mound when they did it.
Yeah, exactly. Because that, I mean, that really was the fear that all Cubs fans had, is that their memories of such a championship are going to be tainted by the fact that Chapman was going to be like this enduring image on the mound. So... thank Rajai Davis, I guess, Cubs fans, because you got away with one there. But pretty much all elite athletes, they really kind of don't make the amount of money that they're actually should be making. If you look at it sort of like a, you know, however many millions of dollars per win added is actually worth. But I mean, it's kind of a shame that like less than a year after, you know, all this controversy happened, that it's really not going to ultimately play a big role in that.
There is just no evidence that being a bad person has ever precluded anyone of exceptional athletic ability from being given a spot to help the team. That only happens when you keep getting arrested or when the evil that you do as a person gets in the way of you actually showing up and doing your job. Does Aroldis Chapman's 100-mile-an-hour fastball warrant his contract? No, but he does have 102 with movement, and that might. I do have this theory, though, that Joe Maddon is such a progressive nice guy that that's why he overused Chapman in Game 6, such that he melted down in Game 7. Not only did Maddon want to win the first World Series in 108 years, he wanted to do it with the guy on the mound who wouldn't give you the bad taste in his mouth. But to echo what Eric says, pure baseball, dumb to overpay for a closer.
I'm going to just make sure that everything you just said is transcribed, and I'm going to send it to all my friends. That was the best analysis of an absurd situation that I've heard at least all week. And I've heard a lot of analyses of absurd situations this week. So, Eric, I am thrilled to say that you have an uplifting story for us. Am I right?
Yeah, I would say that if there was sort of a common theme to this week, you could put it under the umbrella of gracious responses in the face of unexpected disappointment, I suppose you could say. And we kind of know the obvious ones, but I think one that a little bit flew under the radar was Donyell Marshall, who played for, I think, 8 different teams or 10 different teams in like 15 seasons in the NBA. And was a capable player, but was really kind of in the record books for only one reason, and that was because he once hit 12 three-pointers in a game. And the other two guys that held that record were Kobe Bryant, who you just sort of assume would want that record based on ego alone, and the other one is Steph Curry, who actually did it during that pretty memorable game from OKC last season where he hit that shot from, you know, Tulsa to win the game in overtime. But it just so happened this week that Steph Curry, who you would assume would be the one person to break that record, actually broke that record and hit 13 three-pointers in a game, thus knocking one Donyell Marshall completely from the NBA record books. Mm. And you would think that he would have, you know, every right to be sort of bitter or upset about that, but he tweeted, waking up to the news of Steph Curry breaking the record 13 threes, congrats, knew it was only a matter of time, # it was a great 11-year run. It really was a great 11-year run for Donyell Marshall, who is now no longer in the NBA, sadly, but is the head men's basketball coach at Central Connecticut State University. Go Blue Devils, the other Blue Devils. Maybe we should have a little bit more Donyell Marshall in today's sports. Get him back in the NBA. He deserves a little bit better than to be stuck where he is right now.
Mike, you go along with this, not only that he should be back in the NBA, but that he is quote-unquote stuck where he is coaching in Central Connecticut State. I don't know how they're going to feel about that.
I think Central Connecticut's a fine place for Donyell Marshall. I think that he could prove his mettle there and maybe move up to a Boston University. And eventually, that was Jim Calhoun's path, wasn't it? Eventually
Rick
be
Pitino.
The UConn coach. Yeah.
Let us hope that he doesn't follow Rick Pitino.
Oh,
maybe not.
Well, I am delighted, as you both seem to be, that goodness and graciousness has seemed to have surfaced at the end of this discussion. And it's nice to hear somebody acknowledge that records are, in fact, made to be broken. It gives me hope that we will, in fact, all carry on. My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Mike Pesca, the host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist, and Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.